we can get our Bibles out. We're going to be in John chapter 1 this morning. And what we've been doing for the last couple of weeks, let me grab the page in the Pew Bible here. The Pew Bible is in page 886. If you don't have a Bible with you, page 886. What we've been doing for the last couple of weeks is we've been just kind of plodding along through a little series called The Christmas Quartet. And what we're trying to do with The Christmas Quartet, anybody like orchestra music? Love it. Good. Going to an orchestra is just a magical experience, right? And what's amazing about an orchestra is it's not just one string, it's lots of strings, it's lots of people, it's all these people putting their talents in the same room, working together to make something beautiful. A quartet's four strings. And so what we've been doing is we've been looking at the four Christmas stories. Maybe you didn't know that we had four of them. Why do we need four of them? We just need one, don't we? And yet, we need four stories so that we can hear the different sounds, the different notes, the different emphases, the different themes that each of the writers have to tell us about Jesus and his birth. We probably actually have more than that. You can go to 1 John and find another one. So we've looked at Matthew and we said, this baby is no ordinary baby. This is God with us. This is God. This baby is no ordinary baby. This is God born into our midst to be with us. We've looked at Luke and we've talked about how just like any baby being born, there's this incredible experience of relief that springs, this joy and relief that are tied together, the joy that springs from relief at the birth of a baby, and how everybody who puts their hands on Jesus, everybody who gets to partake in that experience as Jesus is born, just joy. They're singing, they're waxing eloquent, they're singing songs and writing poems. And so we talked about that. And so we're right here, we're in John, and we're going to look at what he has to contribute. Next week, we're going to be in John again, but we're going to be in the book of Revelation. So we'll put our hard hats on and kind of read a really tricky Christmas story in Revelation 12. But John does much the same as what Matthew does. He has a lot of the same themes that Matthew does to tell us who this baby is and why this matters. What I will say is before we read the opening several lines of John's gospel is John is one of those books that is very simple on the surface, just like a bunch of simple words. It's very easy to read. And yet I pray that as we read this, you just find yourself kind of going, wow, this is one of the most dense paragraphs in our entire Bible. Incredibly rich, incredibly dense. We could never unpack all of it today. My prayer is that we find something rich in it, and the Lord helps us see that. So let's read the Christmas story according to John. It starts very much like the very first page in our Bibles, the creation story, the Genesis story. In the beginning, John begins, just like Moses does in Genesis 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. This is a pretty important person. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but he came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which shines and gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to his own people, and they didn't receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born, but not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. Here's the Christmas story in a nutshell, verse 14. Just like kind of like what Matthew says, but just in John's own rich way of saying it, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Eugene Peterson translates that verse in The Message, and many of you may have that right in front of you. It says, the Word became flesh and moved into the neighborhood, moved in right down the street. We've seen His glory. Glory is of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about Him and cried out, this is He of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me. For from His fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one's ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side, but this one, He has made Him known. There's just a ton here. I mean, there's just a ton here. This is God's Word. This tells us about Jesus. And John is really trying to tell us, I think, a couple of things. He's trying to tell us a lot of things. But he's just trying to set up the rest of his story, the several chapters that will come to try to unpack this incredibly rich opening to his story of Jesus. He begins by basically saying this. Jesus, like Matthew, is God. He's God. This is no ordinary person. What he's trying to say is, and he uses the word light several times, he's the light of men. This is the light that gives life to all people. He shines light on everyone. He's full of light. What John's trying to say is this. When you look at Jesus, when you think about Jesus, when you imagine Jesus, then you need to think about God. That this person, this baby that's being born at Christmas time, is meant to be seen in the same light as God. And for us as Christians, we might go, oh yeah, old hat, you know, that's fine, that's normal. But yet, that is one of the most mysterious and one of the most rich teachings that we have to give to the world, is that this baby is somehow uniquely one person in this triune dance of what theologians call the Godhead, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit, that for time, eternities past, have been loving each other and giving to each other and serving each other. They've been three unique persons, all sharing in the same essence, all maintaining the same equality as God, together giving to one another, loving each other, revolving around each other, doing what's best for the other. John says, one of these unique persons, what he calls the Word, in Greek, the Logos, the message. This one of the three is meant to be seen in the same light as God. I like the way our children's Bible, the Jesus Storybook Bible, translates it. He says, the author says that the Word is everything God wanted to say to the world in a person. When you read the story of John and you know this is the Word, the pre-existent God, the pre-existent deity, maybe we should just come down to our level and say, what does that mean? What John's trying to say is if you read John's gospel cover to cover, what you need to be wrestling with when Jesus talks, when Jesus says something, when Jesus does something is, this is the one that God has sent to say his unique message to the world. Everything he's wanted to say to the world packed into a person. Jesus is the Word. Jesus is the message. When we think about Jesus, we need to see God. That's how John sees him. John says, Jesus is meant to be seen in the same light as God. And that's a pretty challenging thing. John took a very big risk in saying that. He wasn't trained to think that that was possible. He wasn't raised with the idea that there could, in fact, be more to the one God than just one person, that there could be multiple people inside that incredibly tight unit of love and fellowship. So he's going way out on a limb to say, we've seen him. In fact, in 1 John, he says, our hands touched him, our ears heard him. We know this is crazy. We know we're risking everything. But when we tell you about Jesus, we must do no less than see him in the same light as God. Jesus is meant to be seen in the same light as God. And so when we have family and friends, and maybe you were raised in a tradition that maybe didn't see Jesus in quite the same light, if you have a Mormon background or a Jehovah's Witness background, or you have family or friends, and they say Jesus is right in there and he's close, but he's not quite to be seen in the same light as God. Maybe he's just another step or two below. That's a really big step. John says he was with God and he was God. That when we talk about Jesus, we're talking about God. This is pre-existent deity. This is God himself in one of the unique forms of the eternal Son being born into the world to save us. And if we let go of that, if we lose that, it's not like we just have a little chink in our armor. We lose everything. In fact, we don't do justice to the very thing Jesus said. That was the very thing that got him in trouble. That was the very thing. Everything, when you read the rest of the story, when Jesus has conflicts with people, everything's fine until he identifies himself with God. This is the dividing line. He gets in an argument with a group of religious people, and he tells them, before Abraham even was, I am. He takes on the covenant name of God that he tells to Moses when he's giving him the law. He says to the religious leaders, I'm not just a nice guy. I'm not just a good person. I'm not even just a moral teacher. I am. I'm taking on the very name of the one that gave Moses the law. I was there at the beginning and before. And it was there that they say, well, we need to kill him. Because that's blasphemy. Jesus himself didn't even say, I'm just a good guy. I'm a nice friend. No. He made every claim to equality with God. And you might say, well, that's arrogant. How dare he? And yet we don't really have many other options, do we? The only really option we have, if we're really going to let Jesus speak, is we let him be who he says he is, or we reject that. We can't make an alternate category. He doesn't even give that one to us. So John, at the very outset, when we're celebrating Christmas, when we see the birth of this baby, it's an incredibly rich mystery. We're never going to fully unpack it. What we hear and what we see in the early church and throughout the years is they don't necessarily try to fully explain it, but what they do is they just fiercely try to protect it. They just try to say, this is the one unique thing that we have to give to the world, is that God, in his unique Son, was born into the world, and this baby is meant to be seen in the same light as God. Now, I pray that you're with me and that you maybe are, we're all in good company with the fact that that might be a struggle, that we might go, tell me more. Can you help me understand that? Can you unpack that? Is there something more you can tell me to help prove that? Can you help me understand that? In fact, Jesus' own disciples would say, yeah, that's nice, Jesus, but just show me God, just show me the Father, and that'll be enough. That'll be enough. And what does Jesus say to Philip later in John 14? He says, Philip, have I not been with you this whole time? That when you look at me, you're seeing God. When you look at me, you're supposed to see the Father. You're supposed to see what God is like. So John is just trying to unpack this incredibly rich principle and just say, when we think about Jesus, when we see the baby in the manger, when we sing our songs and we get all caught up in that, who are we envisioning? What are we looking at? John would say, you need to think about God. This baby's meant to be seen in the same light as God. He goes on, and as you see in verses 6 through 8, 9 through 13, and on down, is he just essentially says this. This baby is not just meant to be seen in the same light as God. This baby is meant to shed light on God. This is what God's like. This is who he is. Look at verse 18. No one's ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side, but nobody's seen him. Until Jesus. But this person has made him known. As far as hard as it might be to wrap our heads around, as much as it might just be to doubt that, we've seen him, we've known him. Jesus is God with skin on him, if you will. Jesus has made him known. And so this is a person that's meant to shed light on God. What is God like? We read the gospel stories. This is what God's like. The two phrases that he says to unpack that, because remember, these are simple words. There isn't any word in this paragraph that looks all that hard to spell. You could probably have any of our kids that just came up here and read this. All simple words, but notice what he says in that closing paragraph. In this person, there's this incredible tension. John's trying to say, this is the person that's meant to show us God, shed some light on what God is like and a fullness of it. Just brimming over with this thing. Notice what he says twice in that closing paragraph. He says, this person, is full of two things. He's full of grace, which we like, and he's full of truth, which we tend to not like. And he's both of them. It's not like 50-50, it's 100-100. He's full of grace and truth, which means he knows everything about you and somehow still loves you. Now, hear me. The more I find out about a person, the more you may tend to find out about a person, you may be tempted to not love them quite as much because you know the good and the bad, and you've gotten to see the ugly. And you go, you know, I really loved you more when I didn't know that stuff. And in this person is this incredible tension of grace and truth. He knows you. He knows you better than you know yourself. You don't have half the, you don't even know how bad it is. He knows everything. He knows you better than you know yourself. And he loves you so much to give you his beloved, only begotten Son. That should, on the one hand, keep us from being arrogant and from keep us from being a sniveling mess on the floor. It's both. He knows everything and he loves us richly. I think of, there's just so many encounters where this happens, that this baby, as he grows up into a man, this word that becomes flesh, this one that's full of grace and truth. You just read on how many encounters he has with people. John's style of writing is not like running and like Mark or plodding along, just full of action. John has Jesus very slowly entering into very intimate dialogues and conversations with people, that everything really slows down. He meets with a woman at a well in John 4. And you know what he's full of in that story? Grace and truth. So what does he say to the woman? Call your husband to me. And she says, I'm not married. And he says, you're right, you're not married. You've been divorced 4 times, and the one you're with right now isn't even your husband. And what does Jesus say? So be gone with you. How dare you even speak to me? No, he says, can I have some water out of the well? He puts himself under the woman and lets her serve him. He's full of grace, but he knows everything. He has every right to judge and to punish, and yet he's full of loving kindness. He's full of both. A woman's drug to him, caught in adultery. That must have been interesting. Drug to him, and they say, Jesus, this woman's been caught in adultery. What should we do with her? And you know, the only person that had the right to do anything to judge her was Jesus himself. And he just basically says, anybody who's never sinned, why don't you go ahead and stone her, like the law says. And one by one, and I love this little note, from the oldest to the youngest, the oldest, who are a little bit more aware of their own brokenness and sinfulness, leave until it's just Jesus and the woman. And you know what Jesus does? Nothing. He forgives her, but he doesn't minimize the sin. He doesn't say, you haven't done anything wrong, everything's fine. He says, no. Sin no more, right? So there's this incredible tension where he knows everything. He doesn't say, you didn't get caught in adultery. No. He doesn't say that at all. He says, oh, you're guilty. And I have every right. Because who's the one who's never sinned? Jesus. And he says, I have every right to execute punishment on you. And yet he's full of both grace and truth. He knows everything. He knows everything about the way you talk to one another behind closed doors. He knows everything about the way you manage your money or mismanage it. He knows everything about your comings and goings and your work and your marriage and your house. He knows everything. He's full of truth, and yet he's full of grace. He knows everything about you, and he loves you the same. I don't know about you, but that's pretty amazing. That somebody would know you that intimately, and that his love would increase with the more knowledge that he gains of your and my existence. So this is a baby that's meant to be seen in the same light as God. This is God. This is the one unique eternal Son from the Father before all things. There wasn't one thing that God made that didn't pass through the Father's hands to make the cosmos. He's meant to be seen in the same light as God, but he's also meant to shed light on God. This is what God's like. He's full of grace, and he's full of truth. And you know what the one thing that we're called to do with that? Receive it or reject it. The light is shining, John says. The light is shining on what God is like. And in a deep sense of irony in verses 9 through 13, the true light shines. He's trying to give light to everyone. This is what God's like. This is what I've come to do into the world. He's coming into the world. And ironically, the very people that were equipped to receive him rejected him. Notice what it says. He was in the world. The world was made through him. But the world didn't know him. He came to his own, and his own people didn't receive him. But to all who did receive him, believed in his name, he gave him the right to become children. He became children of God. He wanted to give you a privilege and a right that you could never purchase. He wanted to give you something you could never pay for, you could never earn, you could never work off. He wanted to give you everything. He wants to give you it all, because what a son and a daughter has is what? If they're family, they have the inheritance. Everything that's the father's is now the child's. And so Jesus comes into the world to shed light on the fact that he came to his own and was rejected, but to all who were willing to receive him, he wanted to give them something they could never work for, never pay for, never earn, which is the right to inherit everything from the Father. And I find that wonderful and yet challenging, because the hardest thing in the world is learning how to receive. When I've been to lunch and breakfast with most of you in here, and I haven't paid for much of anything, which is great, thank you. And yet, why is it that we will never let anybody pay for anything for us? Because there's something humbling about receiving rather than paying, isn't there? There's something humbling about saying, thank you. Not doing anything and eating a meal for free. I'm learning how to receive that grace. It's hard to learn how to receive. The hardest thing in the world is learning how to receive. There's a certain passiveness to it. You're not doing anything to earn it. You're not. And that's exactly what John is saying. Those who are willing to bring an open hand, those who are willing to bring their nothing to the Lord, stand to receive everything. I just heard it. One of my favorite preachers once said, the only thing you need is nothing. And a lot of you don't have it. A lot of you don't have it. And so let me graciously say that to us. The only thing you need to receive the everything you were ever created for is nothing. You might say, well, I need faith. Well, yes, you need faith, obviously, says to those who receive in him, who believe in his name. And yet, isn't the act of faith not a grasping but a receiving? That's what he's saying. He's saying you need to receive something. And the only way to receive it is you just have to be humble. You have to say, I don't bring anything to this. I have nothing. And Jesus says, that's just right. You can receive the eternal riches of my Father if you're willing to receive him. Did you come this morning with your nothing? Do you have nothing to bring him? You're in a good position. See, everybody on planet Earth, I think, is broken up into two categories, and this is general, this is a general category, but you're either basing your entire life on something you're achieving or something you're receiving. And John is saying, watch out. If you're basing your entire life on what you're achieving, you're going to end up with nothing. But he's saying, if you're basing your entire life on what you're receiving, you're going to receive it all. At the end of your life, you're going to go, look at what I've done. Or are you going to say, look at what I've received. Look at what I've received. Did I bring anything? No. He knows everything. There's nothing I could bring to him that would say, oh, you deserve this gift. No. There's nothing we could bring to this person and say, look what I've done so that I can receive this gift. It turns all of that on its head. He says, to those who are willing to receive, to those who are willing to maybe do the hardest thing, which is nothing, to receive this child. And I think that's, I mean, if that's not what communion's about, I'm not sure what it is about. Because communion's not about, oh, look what I've done. No. He says, do this as often as you gather to remember me. And we could probably just insert, to receive me. Can I have you do something? A little exercise. You're not going to have to stand up yet. Okay, it's not gonna... You guys are looking at me. I can see the whites of your eyes. Settle down. It's okay. We're not going to do jumping jacks or anything. I just want you to put your hands out. Just put your hands. Come on, John. You can do it. Just put your hands like this. You don't have to do this. Just... Isn't even that itself a little like, I'm so vulnerable. I'm so needy. What do I have to bring? You know what? There's nothing in your hands, I hope. You bring your nothing, and you receive everything. This is a baby that isn't asking for you to bring something. He's asking for you to receive something. And so my prayer as we come to the tables here in just a moment together, that we would come and we would lay our achievements down. We would set the things down that we feel like, I'm so worthy of this, or finally, Father, I'm ready to take communion because I've been worthy this week. We're not worthy. He knows everything. He's full of truth and grace. We're coming this morning not to give, but to receive. And sometimes that can be the hardest thing in the world to do. Let's pray together as we come to communion. God, there's just very little in our world that trains us in the way you'd probably even just say nothing. There's nothing that really trains us for basing our entire life on receiving rather than achieving. But God, we want to receive you. We're so thankful that you were born into the world to save us. And that all of our achievements, everything we've based our life on, could never buy this gift. We're so thankful, God, that you'd be willing to give us something when we don't deserve it. And yet, give us the honor and the dignity of being family, to be yours. So as we receive communion this morning, God, as we come up and take just a little piece of bread and a little piece of juice, and we remember that the reason Jesus was born was to die. We just ask, God, that you'd continue to train our hearts in the realization that what we really need to bring you is nothing. And if we're able to do that, then you'll give us everything. We love you so much, Jesus. Thank you for your grace. It's in your name. Amen.